Welcome back to Sunday Morning, a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. I have a returning guest. It's Deborah Grassman. She's the CEO of Opus Peace, a nonprofit organization. But let's really tell them what the mission of Opus Peace is.
Well, the mission of Opus Peace is to provide educational programs that respond to soul injuries. Soul injuries might be traumatic. We're often familiar with those in people, maybe veterans or police officers or those people who've been raped or had crimes committed against them often receive a soul injury that provides a lasting, lingering effect, sometimes for decades. But also, people can have what we call insidious soul injuries, which is more of a chronic nature that sort of just little by little creep in and start kind of snuffing out our inner sense of goodness, our inner sense of beauty, and might even cause us to think that we are defective or inadequate, something like that. So they basically robs us of ourselves.
And you're talking about this in the caregiving scenario.
Exactly. We are going to be providing a workshop on Friday, May 6th, at St. Petersburg College for caregivers, both healthcare professional caregivers and personal caregivers, because they tend to suffer what I call the insidious soul injuries, where just little by little, the chronic demands every day. Or if you think about, for example, hospice nurses being immersed in dying people and grieving families, or ER staff, or ICU staff, a lot of different professions where you are faced with a lot of serious illness, death, those types of things, it affects the workers. And sometimes we like to pretend like it doesn't affect us, and we just kind of, you know, keep tromping on. But what happens is that grief in little ways starts inundating our lives, and it provides what we sometimes call accumulated sorrow or chronic sorrow, those types of things. So that's what we will be addressing. It's really about liberating unmourned loss.
And that really is the key, is the unmourned loss, because we all experience loss.
It is. We all experience loss, and grieving and mourning is the way to liberate that loss. But in our culture, we're not educated to do that.
Right.
We think that grieving's bad, it's negative, there's something wrong with it, and it's just
makes
the opposite.
You weak.
It's unmourned loss that gets stored in our bodies, gets stored in our minds and our spirits, and subtly and not so subtly sabotages our lives. So our workshop really kind of paradoxically, by going in and kind of re-owning and rehoming that part of ourself that is carrying that loss, it allows that part of self to be liberated and come back home unto ourselves. And surprisingly or not surprisingly, we end up regaining the vitality that that part had kind of gotten locked up into unconsciousness with the unmourned grief.
Well, you know, let's talk about some of the guilt that caregivers feel. And these aren't necessarily people who are in the business of caregiving, but rather just a family member. What kind
Absolutely.
Of guilt do you have in taking? You would think that you wouldn't have that you'd be thinking, well, I'm doing the right thing.
That's true, but first of all, caregivers, personal caregivers especially, you know, they love their loved one and they want to do everything perfect, which is not humanly possible. So anytime anything happens to their loved one that isn't, you know, perfect, they end up blaming themselves, so they often feel guilty for that. They're very protective, want to protect them from any harm of any kind. So if anything happens, oftentimes they will take the blame, even though it was something that was totally out of their control. Commonly, I will see them not taking care of their own selves. And part of the reason why is they feel guilty for even doing any kind of self-care. So a lot of these things just kind of join together to cause caregivers to feel what we sometimes call have unreasonable guilt.
Or expectations of themselves.
Yeah, expectations. They feel selfish if they take any time away to do anything. Or they feel guilty if they ask for help and ask someone else to come in and say, hey, can you give me a hand? Because then they feel like, oh, gee, I don't want to be a burden on anybody else.
Right, because actually the person they're taking care of at that time can be a burden to them, so they already know how it feels.
It's true, and sometimes they can feel guilty that they're healthy and their loved one is not.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of different facets to guilt that often adds to the burden of a care provider.
And how long do you usually think that somebody would be in a position like this before they would start experiencing some of these problems? Is there a typical amount of time?
You know, I don't know that there's really a typical amount of time. I think it's more a matter of awareness. The more kind of stoic a person is, the more they will not ask for help, the more they are into kind of that idea of I'm going to be the perfect caregiver, I'm going to do it all by myself. I think that can sometimes delay the recognition, the self-recognition. And then rather than it just kind of sneaking up on them, just it's like all of a sudden they're just burned out and they, you know, really kind of hit the wall, so to speak. When really it was there all along, they just didn't want to see it. They really just wanted to be superwoman or superman to provide that love and that care and support to their loved one.
Well, and they probably made a promise, you know, till death do you part, better or worse, and they feel their, you know, responsibility to that. But I think for some people too, that it really gives them a sense of purpose and they expect it to somehow pay off for them in how they feel. They think that it's going to feel good and it ends up not feeling good.
It's true. And you know, the other thing, when you talk about a promise, certainly seen this commonly where children or spouses will promise not to put their elder into a nursing home, and they'll make that promise, or the person extracted that promise from them, don't ever put me into a nursing home, and then they give that promise. And then at some point when the needs exceed the abilities, I mean, that's a formula for frustration, for conflict, for exhaustion, and honestly, for that chronic, insidious soul injury that can occur. So I know that's one thing I know. I'm very careful with my adult children. I will never extract from them, don't put me in a nursing home, because I do not want to say that to them and make them feel guilty if, in fact, they can't help it that my needs would exceed their ability to provide.
And you have a whole list of people who have some very great credentials that are coming to this symposium, don't you?
Yes, we have a whole team of people who will be assisting myself as a nurse practitioner, psychiatric nurse practitioner, and hospice care provider. Also, Dr. Robert Carroll, he's a physician who specializes in brain imaging and neurochemistry. Pat McGuire is an ADEC certified trauma counselor. Patty Supranot is a licensed massage therapist that specializes in trauma sensitive massage. Well, Marie Bainbridge, who is a nurse and a Vietnam veteran. Dan Hummer, who has his master's in divinity and has chaplain for many years. And Shaku Desai, who's a nurse and is on our Opus Peace board. So a whole team of people and a whole lot of different formats that we will be using.
It sounds like that you're approaching this from every aspect.
It's a very holistic aspect because it's not as simple as the current kind of buzzword, which is resilience. You know, just be more resilient and then you can do it.
Sure.
And that only adds more guilt to caregivers.
I would imagine.
Because they feel like, oh my gosh, if I were just
more resilient,
more resiliency, then I could do this better. And that's not the case. So it's not as simple or clear cut. And typically people do not look for that unmourned loss and unforgiven guilt as being barriers. And if you just remove the barriers, then that vitality from the soul gets liberated automatically. And there's the automatic resiliency, which without trying to put more resiliency in, it's a matter of releasing the barriers that keep the resiliency from coming forth naturally. So our approach is a bit different. It's more about disarming the heart from fear and guilt, loss, those types of things, and instead being able to learn how to effectively grieve and forgive, including self-forgiveness. And we will do some exercises in developing self-compassion in a very different way than people are used to, because you have to kind of go into that self-compassionate part of your brain to release and do some of this work.
You were saying that you have a different approach to this. It does sound like, even with all the strides that we've made in health and mental health counseling in the last couple decades, that this is a completely different approach.
Well, I'm not sure that it's a completely different approach. There are certainly approaches used kind of scattered around, and we've
right.
tried to condense them into a way that does sort of go against the grain, because as I said, it's only natural to want to run away mm-hmm. from your fears and run away from losses. And it's so surprising to people. It's just amazing when we do these workshops in one day's time, how people can learn to just have a different relationship to the part of their own self that's carrying that pain, mm-hmm. rather than saying, go away, get out of here, I don't like you,
right.
and then trying to distract yourself with, you know, TV or food or mm-hmm. alcohol or whatever your favorite numbing agent is.
Right.
It's just amazing just to teach people and to help them open up to learning a different relationship, because our advertising on TV or anything is always telling you, oh, you don't need to be afraid. You don't need to feel the loss. You don't need to cry. You don't need to grieve. Run away from that and just be happy. I
right.
call it the Disney World mentality. We just want to be like that all the time.
Right.
You know, and it ends up, ironically, having the opposite effect, because we get numbed out of our own life. We get
right.
squeezed out of our own life. And so our approach is really rather simple, pretty straightforward, and it's greatly reinforced by all the research, for example, that Bessel van der Kolk up in Boston and his study Center for Trauma has reinforced all the approaches that we use. They use similar approaches with post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's proving to be quite beneficial.
I was going to ask you, is it mostly war veterans that you're seeing this in, or is it people that are in the medical caring business, or is it pretty much equal?
I would say it's equal. Certainly, you know, I worked for 30 years doing hospice work at mm-hmm. the VA. I personally
wow.
took care of more than 10,000 dying veterans during my 30-year career. Certainly a lot of what I have learned about trauma, learned about disarming the heart from fear, recovering a person's life, has come with dealing with combat veterans who have had PTSD. And
right.
many of them have exerted tremendous courage to recover their lives. And they actually develop, especially on their deathbeds, having done hospice work all this time, there's this wisdom
right.
that emerges at the end of life. And certainly our team has borne witness to that wisdom. And we, you know, those veterans are not here to tell other people what they learned in the last few weeks of life about their trauma, about their PTSD. But we as nurses, doctors, and chaplains were there to witness it. And, you know, there's thousands of PTSD counselors, there's thousands of hospice workers, but there's only a handful of hospice workers who have specialized in post-traumatic stress disorder. That's the wisdom I think that we have to share with the world. And what we have learned is that there is a more penetrating, there is a deeper injury that exists that we call soul injury, that the veterans themselves will often call soul injury.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right. This can be extrapolated to any patient population. It can be in an insidious way. I've never been traumatized the way veterans have.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been the victim of a crime, but I've certainly suffered some neglect when I was young that ended up having significant impact on me in subtle ways, and really in some not so subtle ways.
Right.
So that recovering and unnumbing myself as an
right.
adult decades later, the wisdom that these dying veterans we have found just don't want it to be lost.
Exactly.
Because they have something to teach the world. That really what we're bringing to St. Pete College on Friday is really for caregivers specifically,
mm-hmm.
because caregivers will chronically, little by little, lose their own identity, lose a piece of themselves, and then they kind of wake up one day and go, gosh, how did I get lost? How did this happen?
Right.
It happens just little at a time. It doesn't have to be traumatic, but the end point can be the same.
Exactly.
Just one gets there gradually and one gets there suddenly. And the ones that get there suddenly, that's almost easier in some ways because it's easily recognizable.
Sure.
But when it's subtle, you don't even realize it's happening until sort of like it's too late.
Well, fortunately, it's not. You know, of course, I'm sure that a lot of other people are thinking the same thing. You've learned all this stuff. Why don't you write a book? Well, you already have done that.
I have. It's true. I've written two books. One is called Peace at Last, Stories of Hope and Healing for Veterans and Their Families, which really explains a lot of the veteran dilemma and the soul injuries that we would see, especially as they would emerge at the end of life. And it also very much covers caregivers who are taking care of veterans or military families and those types of things. Mm-hmm. And then the second book is called The Hero Within, Redeeming the Destiny We Were Born to Fulfill. And that book is more about the interior processes, the self-awareness, the recovery, the unnumbing, right, so to speak, and how we can abide, reckon, and behold our own interior hero and develop personal intimacy with the own part of our own self that's carrying the pain and the shame that oftentimes we tend to run away from and numb out rather than encountering that part of self and receiving the energy and vitality that occurs when we can liberate that part of self.
And it sounds so great and it sounds so simple, but it really takes a leap of faith to go into this journey, doesn't it?
It absolutely, that's a great way to put it, because it takes some courage to say, ugh, I'm going to do this differently. Rather than run away from this trigger,
right,
rather than run away from this pain, I'm actually going to stand here and open up to it and feel it. And the odd thing is, or not so odd maybe, is that the fear of pain is worse than the pain itself.
Right.
It really is. But until we can muster that courage,
exactly,
to do it that way. And oftentimes, you know, I would tell people, you know, you only do as much as you want to do. You don't bite off more than you can chew.
Right.
You know, if you have a big pain, if you have a big trauma, you know, you may absolutely know you need to approach that, and now may not be the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, you know, there's no
right or wrong.
Losing right or wrong in doing that.
Right.
At the same time, it may be big, and you should not try to bite off the whole thing. You just take one little piece at a time. You stay steady. It's amazing what happens when you can just change your relationship rather than trying to numb it out or fear it and just open up to it, how that creates an experience of hope. And that's what we give people on this workshop on Friday. They will leave, hopefully, by the end of the day, they will leave with an experience of themselves. And that gives them hope that it really can be done. Just slightly differently opens up a trajectory that allows for healing.
This is this coming Friday, May 6th. It's, excuse me. This Friday, May 6th, from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at St. Pete College in Clearwater. It's $69. That includes lunch. How do we get in touch with you?
Well, the best way to register, I want to mention, too, there's six continuing education credits for nursing, for physical therapists, for occupational therapists, for licensed mental health care professionals, for nursing home administrators, for social workers and ALF workers. So there are six C's that go with that. But for more information, you can go to spcollege.edu/health-CEU to register. You can also call St. Pete College at 727-341-3393, and you can register, or you can just show up at the door, which is at 13805-13805, 58th Street North in Clearwater. That's the St. Pete College Epicenter.
Deborah Grassman has been my guest again this morning. It's always wonderful to talk to you, and there's always so much more I want to ask you, so please, again, I'm going to ask you for this favor. Will you come back?
Absolutely. I'm just so thankful, Mimi, that you recognize and value the work that Opus Peace is doing in providing programs for soul injury. It's so needed, and it opens so many doors for people. So thank you for helping us with our message for our nonprofit.
And thanks for joining us on Sunday morning.
Thank you.
You were perfect, of course.